Hello and welcome to the podcast of fringeartculture.com. This podcast aims to enrich the community by focusing on local art and culture. Before we jump into part two of the interview with Peter Thompson, we have a sample reading by Sandy Sharma of Reggie McLean's work called Fairy Blood. I hope you enjoy it.
Asha lifted the straps of her heavy backpack, trying to ease the discomfort in her shoulders. Doc Brown called you a crypto-something. What is that exactly? Cryptozoologist, Zeeb, her bush guide, answered without looking back. Cryptozoology is the study of creatures whose existence is not proven. Cryptic creatures. And you specialize in Sasquatches? She came close to adding a sarcastic, ever find a real one? But caught herself. No. Okay. But you usually do Sasquatch hunts, right? Yes, but I don't study them. I just find them for tourists. In the off-season, I study other species. Like what? He stepped over a large fallen log, turned, and held out a hand to help her over. Not fairies. Harsha decided an eye roll wasn't amiss. A glint in Zeeb's eye told her he not only caught the gesture, he found it amusing to tease her. Fine. Let him be cryptic. Like his Sasquatches or whatever. Her shoulders ached and her stomach grumbled. Can we stop for lunch? He checked his watch. Yeah, we can take a break. She thumped the log to check for stability before sitting on it, then fished two granola bars and a large bag of trail mix from her pack. Zee pulled a bag of jerky from his pocket and sat next to her. They munched without talking. Zeeb alternated between slipping glances in her direction and staring into the woods as if he saw fascinating shapes among the green and brown patchwork of the flora. Harsha let her eyes wander around the area while she ate, but kept them away from him while her irritability lasted. She felt better by the time she finished her bar and started on the trail mix. Want some? No, thanks. So, you hunt Sasquatch for tourists and you're not into fairies. What is it you do study? Mostly Homo lichens. He uses Latin names. Yet more evidence of how crazy he is. Oh well, I'm the one paying to find a fairy. Might as well take it seriously. Do you find many up here? Zeeb's eyes met hers, hesitant for a change, and speculative. Why are you here? To find a fairy. Like I told you, several times. Do you believe in them? She pretended to look for a particular nut in her bag of trail mix while she wrestled with a clash of impossible hopes and crippling doubts jostling her belly. She could point out she paid him $30,000 up front with a promise of another $30,000 to find her one. That's proof enough of belief, right? If I say no, will one of them drop dead? Not if you clap. She put away her trail mix and clapped. So why are you here? She wanted to change the subject. Better yet, she wanted to go back to camp. I need to find a fairy. But you just said, I need to find one. It doesn't matter whether I believe they're real or not. I have to believe in them and I have to find one. Appalled at herself for blurting so much, she added, please don't ask me to explain. His eyes locked hers, searching. She wanted to squirm out from under his gaze, but it challenged her to hold her ground. After a minute, he nodded and stood. To her surprise, instead of leading her further into the woods, he started back toward camp. There's a small family of Sasquatch about 40 miles northwest of here. Really? She stopped her tracks, not sure whether to scoff at his words as an obvious joke or take them at face value. You're not putting me on. You can talk to them. He offered a hand. Realizing he thought she stopped because she found some obstacle, she walked on. My brother thought you got a buddy to put on a Wookiee suit. He chuckled and let his hand drop. Good idea. I've had some real pain-in-the-neck clients who deserve to be fleeced. I'm not sure I could live with myself, though. You could claim to be a were-Wookiee. You mean change in the light of a full Death Star? His eyes glinted with mischief. Nah, I'll stick to honest business. I like to give my clients their money's worth. Think you can get me my money's worth? I'll try. Fair enough.
fun time.
And now, the rest of the interview.
We look at, obviously, your life has been filled with the narrative of art along the place, because your father was an artist too, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he was, my dad's Peter Allen. He was a well-known watercolour artist on the mid-north coast around the Coffs Harbour area. I mean, if you go
I think I've heard of Peter Allen.
Well, I've heard of a Peter Allen.
Yeah, not that. I was really glad to get married because I was the still cool Australia girl, you know, like girl all through school. And, yeah, no, I was really happy to get married and change my name from Allen to Thompson. But yeah, he was a really he went to the Julian Watercolour School in Sydney, so one of probably the premier watercolour school in Australia, and his paintings would be sitting probably in every doctor's surgery, I think, up and down the mid north coast. He was quite prolific, and he was a landscape artist, and it was interesting that I have some of his works, and now they're foxing. And the most amazing one that he did, which was all in greys, and he painted a cyclone as it came down the Coffs Harbour coast. He painted in 15 minutes, and it's the best painting he ever did, I think. It's completely foxed and ruined.
Sorry, I'm not sure what... Oh.
So foxing, like if you knew scrapbooking, Grant, no. Foxing is where the lignin... It's not archival or acid-free paper. And the framing materials that were used, like the mat board, was also not archival, even though he was told that it was. So what's happened now is he's got these little rust spots all over the painting, which would cost an... I've priced it, a cost an arm and a leg to restore. Yeah. And he lives in at Nambucca Head, so it's kind of a salty on the sea place, so which is also not great for art, that kind of art either. Yeah. So yeah, he was. And so my first dabble into fine art was watercolours. I didn't have enough money to buy really good watercolours because they're hideously expensive. And I started doing it, but I did it different. And, of course, I'd ask my dad for his critique and he'd say, that's rubbish. You know, like constantly, you've got a problem. Your painting's really good, but you've got a problem with your composition, or your composition's really good, but your painting's rubbish. You know, like, and so we would keep going through that. And then that number one painting that I did in mixed media that was fine, I considered it fine art, was Bark One. That one that you have issues with.
Yeah. For some reason. I don't know if anyone's seen this on the blog post, but for some reason it makes me angry and I don't know why.
Yeah. So that started out as a watercolour painting on a special watercolour canvas. So those canvases are have primed for watercolours. And I thought, oh, wow, I don't have to frame it and cost, you know, the earth. But then I didn't get what I wanted out of it. I couldn't create crackles and I couldn't create, you know... I couldn't create what I wanted to create out of it. And my kids had attacked that tree, and all of the slashes you see on there are from them attacking it with sticks and sharp oblets. So they've actually scarred the tree right up and down the tree. And so I wanted to bring that out, but I couldn't. I just couldn't create it. It was probably because I didn't have the skill, but I also wanted it to be just that little bit deeper. Like I wanted it to either come out a little bit or be a little bit deeper. And so that was my first foray into mixed media fine art, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And I thought, yep, never going back, never going back. And I love the idea that in my Eyes in a Blanket painting, a lot of what's in those eyes is pencil.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got a lot of different things that you use, but I love using different pencils to put the striations in the eyes because they do it, I think, better than anything else.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So what are your favourite, like, I think you mentioned on the blog that it was charcoal that you really love to work with as well.
I love, and just like, you know, Don
Water
starts.
It's very visceral, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I could pick up a burnt piece of something and draw with that, you know, like, yeah, anywhere. I could be on a desert island and I could burn some sticks and draw with that, you know, on a cave, you know, like. So I like that kind of, although I have some really refined charcoal. So I'm not completely, you know, pick up a burnt stick and I'll sit and burn it and do that. No, I'm not completely like that. But I do like the properties of it. And I think as a medium, as a basis for drawing, I really like it. It blends. You can blend it with matte medium. You can blend it with paint. You can blend it with gesso. You can blend it with water.
Yeah.
And you can do a lot of different things with it to create something that looks like an ink and wash.
Yeah.
But it's just charcoal and water, you know. So you can create a lot of different things with it. And I build a lot of my things. And, like, Don Waters does the same thing. Every painting that he starts off as a charcoal drawing and then he varnishes over it. And then he creates his layers from that, from the shapes that he – because he doodles on his canvases.
Yeah.
Right? And so he creates his shapes and his patterns out of that. And I love the idea that there is always something earthy at the bottom of everything that I create.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? Whereabouts are we going now? So do you have another project that you want to do? Obviously, this is a new thing for you.
Yeah. Well, that exhibition represents 3 years of work. And I think you could really see the diversity in what I do.
Yeah.
And I would call myself as an eclectic artist.
Eclectic and a half, I would say.
Yeah. Really?
Well, you know, it takes an artist to refine themselves in one sort of discipline, but to be able to kind of attack a whole bunch of different disciplines, which is, I guess, where the journaling really brings that out in you.
Yeah.
You know, it and you do so much of it very well. Like, some people would be able to go, I'm awesome with acrylic paint, but I suck with charcoal.
Yeah.
Whereas you seem to be able to be very, you know, fluent to, and, you know, you put a lot into it, obviously. But yeah,
yes, my husband would say yes to the detriment of everything else. But it becomes very addictive. I think what sets me apart as an artist is the fact that I really know a lot about the chemical composition of everything that I use, and I'm intrigued by it. And everything that you saw in that exhibition was archival quality.
Yeah.
The watercolours were the best on the market. You know, the twigs have been sealed. You know, like, the glues that I've used are non-corrosive. And I've investigated the chemical properties of everything I use rather than just being slap happy about it.
Yeah.
Which is a hallmark of mixed media in inverted commas now. And as I teach mixed media around the traps, people say to me, that's not what I thought mixed media was. And my watercolour paintings are mixed media because they're ink and watercolour.
Yeah.
But my twig canvases are also mixed media, but they're, you know, acrylic and twigs.
Mm.
So mixed media just means about using two different things or more, or 50 different things, all in the one painting to create the effect that you want to go with. And it's not a particular style, I would say. For me, then, what I'm going to next, I've been invited by an internationally renowned National Geographic photographer to paint a series of Mouse Kingdom paintings based on his photographic series called The Mouse Kingdom, which was an hour and a half that he spent in India in a mouse-infested place, and he produced some of the most amazing photographs in that. I did one of that one photo of the year, so it's a little mouse popping out of a hole in a wall, and the colours were very rich and beautiful in that, and I finger-painted it. And I said to him, you know, it was, again, journal page, but I posted a photo of that on his page, his photography page, and he said, oh, my God, I love that. I can't wait to see what you do next, which was amazing. Like, I didn't even think that he would notice it. So then I said to him, I'd like to paint more, but this was just a journal page. I'd actually like to paint, like, really big, big framed works for this, again, finger painting. And he said, you can do whatever you like. You can do my portraits, because he's really a portrait photographer.
Yeah.
You can do my mice, and you can use my name, and we'll have a joint exhibition. So, and he's Polish based.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I also have some concept works. The connections pieces were a series of concept works for something that's going to be really different coming up in the future, and all of, and that'll be called poles, and all of those works will look like poles. So it will look really, really quite different when you walk in, to not just see things on a wall. There'll be things that you walk amongst.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've got a lot of different ideas. And some exhibitions coming up, so yeah, I'm excited about that. Yeah, it's kind of opening up. Yeah.
So where do you think? Because obviously, in our opinion, and the stuff that we've found is that there's a lot of awesome artists in this area, with a lot of talent, like yourself, and there's a need for, I think, a lot more sort of public engagement with it across the board. Where do you see Logan Art being in the next sort of 5 to 10 years? Because at the moment, I think a lot of our artists that we're are very prolific, but we're concentrating outside of our area, you know, trying to enrich, you know, Brisbane and the Gold Coast and, you know, the coast of Queensland and, you know, obviously nationally and internationally online and so forth. But the one thing that we're really passionate about as Fringe is trying to get the people in this area engaged as well, which is, you know, in a low socioeconomic area can be quite difficult because there is such a diverse range of people. I think there's like 217 different ethnicities, and to kind of highlight.
We also don't have the same population density as some of the more, the biggest cities.
Yeah.
So we're kind of more spread out as well. So trying to get people to events.
There's pockets of things going on, but they're not sort of unified in a way.
And I'm very much, where do I see it going? I would like to see movements like yours increase, and I would like to see more of them.
Yeah.
And I would like to see them across the wide range of the arts. And I like the idea of taking art to the masses, because art is a reflection of the cultural essence of who we are in any given generation, at any given point in time. And if you have a look at the art collections around the world today, they are sometimes the only historical representation of that culture that we have.
And that's true.
And so art is absolutely critical, all forms of it, the writing, the singing, the dancing, the recording of those things, the paintings, the sculptures. They're critical for us as a nation to record this time in our history, but also to comment and create change,
yep,
and to prick social conscience and to also bring pleasure. And the first thing that we as a Western society lose when all we do is focus on economy and economics is we lose the arts, and you see arts funding slashed, yeah, right across the board in all sectors of the arts funding. Because the governments don't see the need for
it. It's an intangible value.
No, it's a cultural, who we are as a nation, yeah, kind of thing. And the arts always, in my opinion, should be incredibly well funded. And I've thought this long before I became an artist, should be incredibly well funded, because they are the reflection of who we are.
Yeah.
Well, in a kind of a, you know, almost a libertarian sense, would we be take advantage from really just getting out there and saying, convincing people to basically give to it, you know, so that they have kind of ownership over it, over their own art in their own community. So if we say, if we're going out there, we're actually inviting people into the art culture by saying, you know, here's a piece, become part of it, become part of the art culture by getting involved. And then they're, you know, art funding is obviously required.
Art funding, I see, takes art to the masses. A lot of the arts funding is about moving a production around,
yeah,
or
yeah,
about moving art collections around, or about sponsoring projects.
Programs.
Yeah. And our local, you know, regional development art,
yeah,
funding is all about that. And it's more about then using it wisely, and if you're as art becoming educated as arts practitioners, to use those things. I think we're all different as artists as well. So some are very introspective and insular and very shy, and really they just want to paint and be left alone. And then there are people like me that art is an expression of their community engagement and the stories that I come across in my life and those around me. Yeah. And I want to see arts hubs, like, ideally in this centre. If they want to make it a business centre, which they do, and an industry hub, why can't they make unused spaces for storefronts and factories and things where things have gone bust or are being disused as arts hubs, so studio spaces where people can create and then take those out to Eats and Beats.
Yeah.
Can take those out to functions that we have, like Christmas carols functions or arts in the park or things like that.
Yeah, awesome. But I completely agree. I think, you know, even as I know that the council has recently given extra funding to, say, the Beenleigh Theatre Group, for example, and, you know, their restoration of their venue is long overdue. It's fantastic and they do such great work, especially with Jets and everything. But to be able to have them come out into the... To be able to have them to come out to the community and do a pop-up show and, you know, outside Beenleigh and, you know, just kind of... involve the community in that kind of way is something that I really would love to see more companies doing, and you know, looking at all sorts of different things that you can happen. I know there's like the Music Cavern are putting on their own student sort of concert, but to get those kids out there, why don't they hook up with the Hyperdome and say, you know, create a busking spot or something.
Or why don't they give them piazza space on a Friday night?
Exactly.
Like, you know, like, and that's easy to do because all there is a great big TV there, you know, like...
Playing ads.
Yeah.
All the time
All the time. Like, and there are people sitting on that lawn constantly. Why is not the piazza one of those spaces? Why is it only for guest visiting artists?
Yeah.
You know, and that is a beautiful cultural hub with food and it's got a great vibe.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that. Yeah. I definitely think we should. And I think there's heaps of different platforms for it as well. And one of the things that Logan, I think, is doing really good is things like their Eats and Beats, and that's got massive community engagement.
Yeah.
Then if they're – so it's like a social media account. If you've got a really strong social presence, then people want your brand because they can piggyback off it to get additional coverage. Well, Eats and Beats is like that.
Yeah.
And so why don't they then incorporate more into that?
Yeah, that's what we said. You know, why don't you have a pop-up art store or, you know, get readings on in between songs for, you know, from poets and all sorts of things, and have, you know, people walking around and pantomime and all sorts of stuff going on.
Oh, wouldn't it be awesome to have pantomime in the streets? Like, I remember going to Melbourne and having that on the streets where it was just, it must have been during an arts festival thing, and they had a whole bunch of pantomimes, pop-up mime artists, pantomimes.
These days it's like flash mobs. You could have a flash mob pantomime. How awesome would that
be? Absolutely, because that's the whole... That's a new form of cultural expression.
Yeah.
I love flash mobs for that idea. But, yeah, I really kind of think, you know, that at some point we need to be infusing that. And I think my heart for infusing it in the community is in that disadvantaged space. So those people that can't afford to have art supplies, have latent talent, don't know it, until they pick up a brush.
Yeah.
That kind of work.
And even if they don't have talent, who cares?
Who cares? Just make a mark and use colour.
Yeah.
You know, like with Canefields, I have people there that will never be able to really paint because of the conditions that they've got.
Yeah.
But I learned to be able to use what they can do to create something beautiful, and they are just as proud of their, say, woodblock photo transfers as they are of, say, Greg's work, where he's getting some beautiful fine detail in his pointillism works.
Yeah.
Yeah? And I think to, you know, I've encouraged them to write as well and to incorporate mixed visual media into their work. So, you know, we'll have we're having an exhibition in September. They're having at Able Gallery, there'll be an exhibition, and it's kind of Disability Month. So they're having all different types of disability sectors exhibiting artworks that month.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm really excited about the fact that, you know, the Logan Artists Association are actually going to be supporting some different facets of the community that you would call fringe or outsider art.
Yeah.
Yeah. And outsider art is actually a term for art created within the mental health space.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to them working on that. One of the things that I want to encourage the Logan Artists Association to do is to work smarter, not harder. You don't want, they've just, you know, there's a couple of gallery directors that have burnt out because they're doing all too much and then working full time. And I think if we're passionate artists and we want to bring our art to the community, that council funded space is an absolutely beautiful gallery.
It's beautiful.
It is one of the premier spaces. I actually think it's more light and airy than the Logan Regional Art Gallery, and it is a lovely space, and it is has a lovely setting. Why aren't we doing dance, and why aren't we doing art therapy in the gardens? Yep. Why aren't we having, you know,
acoustic
workshops
people
outside?
Out the back of their, you know, they've got the beautiful courtyard sort of space out there.
Beautiful, and, yep. And you know, the community has helped create that, and so part of my goal within Logan Artists Association is to try and bring them, help them with their social media presence, help them reach out to the community a little bit more, and to just bring that further reach. And I think you guys are doing a great job with that as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we're trying as much as we can with them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, part of that is having artists that are passionate, not just about the art. And some of the artists in associations, it's just about the art. And they don't necessarily have the business smarts. So I have a background in business, so I know how to market myself. Yeah. And I know how to have that reach, and I know what works and I know what doesn't. And so I infuse that into my art. They were really surprised that I had an ABN. And I'm like, don't all artists? No. They don't. So I think part of that whole educating, you know, artists that if you want to go out and have your art seen, you think it's important, you think it has value, then you need to take those steps behind to back that up. And as a community organisation, we need to be a little bit smarter in the way that we work.
Yeah, they should be maybe trying to put on workshops like that. I know that they do go into...
Into
the library and do bits and pieces on the well, sorry, that's the Logan Art Gallery go in and do workshops on the Regional Arts Development Fund grants proposals and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But even like if, you know, the people that are surprised that you'd have your ABN, I wonder if it's because they subconsciously don't value their art as much. It's more about self-expression for them rather than the whole business side of it. So
or they're purely a hobbyist and they take it, you know, they're retired and they do it in their retirement, which a lot of people do. I mean, the demographic for my YouTube channel, 95% of the people that watch it are 45 to 65.
Yeah.
Like, that's really interesting. And most of them are women. I do have a lot of men, and most of them are in the US. So it's like,
the US is a big market.
It's like a huge market.
That's why we kind of want to create our portal as well as a way to kind of get Logan Art out.
Yeah.
So that, you know, we can, you know, get it seen by more people, you know, get it purchased from America. Have to send it over there.
That's right. And I know gallery owners in America that have said to me, you know, when you've got more experience under your belt and you have to think about the type of work that you're creating, because my connections pieces or my Urban Decay triptych, they're quite delicate.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to crate them really carefully so that's an expensive exercise. You've got to be careful about the type
of
work.
You could just do what Naomi did. And just make everything really portable.
I know. I love her work for that, and I love the way that she's so ingenious about doing that. I have a lot of small... I mean, you saw at the exhibition, I have a lot of really small-scale works because I'm used to working in a journal, right? So I'm used to working in that kind of A4, A3 size.
Yeah.
And the connections pieces were the biggest one. Actually, they're not the biggest I've done. I've done 3x3 metre. So I've done great big banners. They're the biggest works that I've done. But the next box is bigger again.
Yeah.
The next box of canvases are bigger again.
Well, I'm just looking at the time, and that might be where we have to wrap it up for the recording.
Okay.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for being with us, Peter.
You're most welcome.
Thanks again for being with us. And as a reminder, leave your comments about this episode on the blog, Twitter, or Facebook. Share the podcast by sharing the Twitter or Facebook post for this episode. And if you like what we're doing and you want to get involved, hit us up on the contact page. See you next time.
Jupiter's bouncer pocket. He walked slowly out of the room, and we heard the slippers.